You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Archaeology, personally, the way I see it, particularly Indigenous archaeology, is a way of resetting the balance. So for me, archaeology has been the only thing that I've been focused on, and this has been something, you know, from very early, from when I was a child, say 5 or 6 years old, and it really stems from acts perpetrated against my people, but my family as well. So acts of desecration, what we would call site damage today. Archaeology, personally, is the way that I exercise my kaitiakitanga. So it's that compulsion, that step inside that I need to do something to ensure that, you know, my people are getting, reaping the benefits of something that is usually they don't. Archaeology is the only thing that captures my attention, and it's like a bridge between, I like the past. I like anything that deals with the past. It offers windows into the past, but south from where you're going. You know, we have the saying, tapuai, footprints go in either direction. Tairanga ki a tua whakarere, tatakihi ngā riehia o a muriakite. What you really need to do is, to go forward, you need to look to the past. So that's a quaint way of putting it. But archaeology, for me, is resetting the balance. It's a way of getting people to listen, and it's a way of getting in touch those things that I hold dear and which other people hold dear.
So last week, I was privileged enough to talk to Makari Rikeheke, an archaeological heritage advisor, but also a whole heap more, and that was her definition of archaeology. In her definition, she academically separated archaeology and Indigenous archaeology, but I kind of thought it was interesting and an important thing to do to work out why she made the separation.
So there's a slight difference in terms of where the two disciplines lie. So one traditionally would say that Indigenous archaeology is a sub-discipline of mainstream archaeology. So Indigenous archaeology basically incorporates more of a native perspective on things and a native approach. There's more emphasis on consultation and being active in how you undertake that, of incorporating a native view. It's also more emphasis is placed on collaborative approaches and making space and forums for Indigenous input, however that looks like, whatever that looks like, whether it's specific input or research queries that focus not so much on the science, but a nice fusion between native knowledge systems and a more technical aspect of archaeology, and those sorts of approaches. Also spans, you know, method and theory, but also begs the question, if you're going to apply this, the study of humanities, i.e. archaeology, then don't forget the social element. So it brings back the social element, brings back the people element to a study that can get overly concerned about the material record, number crunching and data.
So there were an array of elements there that were brought up that seem like what people would kind of consider to be common practice in archaeology, perhaps from a surface level. So I decided that it was important to continue by asking whether that these concepts are only present in Indigenous archaeology or exclusive to Indigenous archaeology, or in the event that they are exclusive, why they may be absent from mainstream archaeology.
They're not absent in mainstream archaeology. It's just that mainstream archaeology as a discipline, when you focus on pure archaeology as a science, they're holding to the archaeological values of that whole system. So it tends to look at the social element in abstract, whereas with Indigenous archaeology and what it means to be native and all that sort of knowledge is peppered throughout the whole thing at every step of the way. It's not locked into one specific area, which I think that's in archaeology. You tend to have a lot of compartments that you put things into, whether that's a subcategory of study, of research, of data. You know, you're always separating them out, whereas with Indigenous archaeology, you tend to have more overlays and more interconnections, and there's an element of inclusiveness doesn't appear in mainstream archaeology.
During the early stages of our conversation, we discussed what brought her to archaeology and her place at Heritage New Zealand, which she now occupies. And she talked about moving through an academic institution within the 90s and a few issues that she encountered as she passed through the system. I then continued to ask what she felt these issues were at the time and whether she felt that these issues are still present in that system today.
Archaeology is it has its roots and its footprint in colonialism and the building of empire. It comes with a lot of baggage to hang over from a time where they held certain notions and that didn't primus Indigenous views or approaches to things. So by the time I got through, and I was going through at a time of transition, so 90s and into early 2000s, you know, things, we could count on one hand how many archaeologists we had practicing out there, Māori archaeologists. We had about four. There were no role models around, so you didn't see any Māori role models either in your peer cohort or out in the community because there were so few and far between. The other thing that I didn't see was that there seemed to lack a cohesion of cross-fertilisation between disciplines at that time. Student attitude from non-Māori, and this is coming from lecturers, some of the students, and particularly from my own, from other Māori who had gone through and didn't see the value at that time of having Māori archaeologists. So at that time you were kind of seen as a race traitor. So that came with another subset of issues. The other thing that I had working against me was the fact that I'm from Rewa, you know, south side. I'm from Manirewa, grew up in places with people that a lot of mainstream New Zealand just doesn't identify with and doesn't allow for. So, you know, you've got, think about family, where you're going to sleep for the night, trying to earn a crust to eat, and then you're going to figure out assignments, how you're actually going to do them, how to get a bus ticket or a train ticket to get into town. You know, you're travelling basically 3 hours a day on public transport. Things get hard. So you have to get inventive. You have to beg and you have to borrow.
From these issues, I decided to ask a question which has been on my mind throughout my very, very brief stint of looking into archaeology. And that kind of furthered the conversation about the force of archaeology as a kind of colonial force. And so I decided to ask whether Makari thought that as a colonial force, archaeology has been and is used to make tangata whenua, as well as other people, justify their place in Aotearoa.
So archaeology is a funny old beast of discipline because it's related to politics, power, nation building. There's all these sorts of things that lie behind the study. So it's a humanities thing. Anyone can run a search and you'll start getting the idea of what's behind archaeology as a discipline. It's never just what you see on the surface. I think it's been used as a tool in the past to entrench a few ideas that have opened up pathways to nation building. That's primarily what it has been used for. It's also been a window into the study of, you know, perceived cultures that were on the outs. I think now we've transitioned into a new space where archaeology is being looked at in terms of what it can do, what knowledge it can bring, and how it can further uncomfortable discussions. So for iwi Māori archaeology, we've realised pretty early on that archaeology deals with our ancestral footprint. And for us, it's not the archaeology per se, but it's the stories and the narrative behind how you get those footprints and how tikanga is the accretion of different behaviours or different tikangas within the landscape, so that the landscape's inscribed by all those behaviours and that's where you get your footprint. And it's also about narrative. Now, that whoever controls the narrative tends to control the story and therefore the power of perception. And inherent in that is placement or location or how you place yourself within a given landscape. And therefore, it brings up issues about settlement pattern, migration, the movement of people, but also it brings up these issues about authenticity. That's a whole another topic, and I'm not talking about how you prove or disprove who you are, but I'm talking about how sometimes people use different methods to prod people into discussing how they've come to be established in a certain place, shall we say. That's what I'm talking about in terms of authenticity. So we get into issues of time scale and chronology and, you know, order.
So this is a general thematic piece, not necessarily linked to one current event. However, I think there is an ever-present need for the coverage of the relationship between the people of Aotearoa and the land that we have in Aotearoa, and how that relationship has developed over time and what it exists as. And I think a link for me that I was interested in further inquiring into was that between Raupatu, a concept that's been frequently discussed on this show, and one that is inherently linked to the confiscation of land, as well as treaty reparations throughout Aotearoa, and that is an ever-present current event, and archaeology. I wanted to understand further what relationship these two kind of seemingly separate entities have.
There is a relationship. Two areas are quite loaded. Okay. In terms of Raupatu, what you're talking about, or what I understand that you to be talking about, is the confiscations, but again, which confiscations are we talking about and where? A lot of it's dependent on place and people. But that, again, that is the interrelationship between archaeology and Raupatu. Both are about place, people, timescale, and assets. So if I take it back to cultural overlays, in one sense you've got Raupatu that occurred prior to the land wars. So you've got those ancient battles for primacy of place, of consolidating pre-European footprint, and then you've got Raupatu in terms of what happens after the musket wars and immediately into the 1860s when talking about land war stages. In terms of Raupatu, a lot of the cultural redress and case studies have centred on resources and assets and cultural footprint, the movement of people, so exodus, transition, reoccupation, and all of that. They have looked at archaeology, but they've looked at archaeology because it's a window into movement of people and footprints, and that's what you're looking at. It's also about resource inventory. So that's why if you pick apart, you know, treaty redress claims, then you'll find all those components in that. And you'll also find, in terms of those who have worked to compile narratives, they've also, they've fused oral traditions, remembered histories, and they've also fused archaeology. Somewhere in the mix is always an archaeologist, whether that's for the crown or for the iwi, because you're talking about subsets of different values. So you're looking at archaeological values and how they mesh with Māori heritage values.
Obviously, I think it's important to follow through by asking whether they do actually mesh together, or how can they mesh in the future if we need them to, or when we need them to.
I think they can, but I think it depends on the lens through which you're filtering things. So for someone in my context, for a Māori archaeologist, because we're from the default setting, the cultural context, there are things that we see that our cultural default allows us to see that are missed by a mainstream archaeologist. And I think there is merit in some of the objectivity that can come with someone who sits outside of that context. So you're always talking, when you're looking at and Alden Yellowhorn is a famous Indigenous archaeologist that talks about this. And if you look at some of the stuff that he's writing around 2006, he'll talk about an internalist, what he calls the internalist archaeology or the internalist approach. And that's what I mean by when you get a native-centred archaeologist. You're talking about windows, cultural filters, but also weeding out bias. So on one hand, for a mainstreamer, they'd have an empirical and colonial bias because they're brought into a Western paradigm and a Western approach to archaeology. And for a native archaeologist, it would be the reverse. So So as long as you're cognizant of which filter information and approach and strategy is being put through, you recognise those and can account for them, then I think you can find a good blend. It's not going to be perfect, and it shouldn't be, because they're different subsets of knowledge and different ways of viewing the world. And I think there's merit in difference.
The final note that I would like, well, that we wanted to leave this on, was understanding what the importance of archaeology is today, especially in a colonial state such as Aotearoa.
For me, archaeology, it's paramount, because it's the way that we, in a modern day sense, can understand our past, and it allows us to see how things have changed, that nothing stays, that nothing's static, and allows us to see difference in the range of diversity, how far we've come, sometimes a measure, but it's also about connection. So it's also a way of maintaining your links to the past, but also to the present. So it's a way of revitalizing. Archaeology can be used as a means of revitalizing some aspects of culture that you want to retain, but it also can provide a pathway or a good template to see and to argue why change and innovation is also something that's pretty cool and something that's normal. So when you start to see, you can see everything that you have today in an ancient context. It's just opening your eyes to seeing those, how you see that in the past. And I'm intrigued and fascinated by those glimpses into the past and what they mean for our present day and what they might mean for the future. And specifically I'm talking about, you know, we look to the ancient past, but for our descendants coming in 200-300 years or even 50 years, they'll look at us today and wonder what was going through our minds and how we did the things we do.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.